On shortly, but as you know, my intro takes a little bit of time, and so we'll get going.
Ed, can you hear me okay? I'm using my headphones.
You sound very clear to me.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Timothy Dawson. I am the administrative law judge designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings upon the request of the Public Service Commission to serve as the hearing officer for this hearing. This is North Dakota Public Service Commission case number PU 20-082. Please silence your cell phones before we begin today. This is the hearing on the application of OE2 North LLC for a waiver of procedures and time schedules and a certificate of site compatibility for the location of a 250 million cubic feet per day gas processing plant in Williams County, North Dakota. The plant is known as the B. Sanderson Gas Processing Plant. The plant will be located on the project site owned by OE2 North, approximately 15 miles west of Williston, North Dakota, in Williams County. Let the record show that it is a little past 9:05 a.m. on April 24th, 2020, and we are conducting a remote hearing through the telephone and internet due to the state of emergency caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. The hearing location was originally noticed for the City of Williston Public Works and Engineering Department. This is the time, date, and place set by the amended notice of filing and public hearing issued by the North Dakota Public Service Commission on April 29, 2020. There are two methods to provide public testimony today. You may provide written testimony through May 1st, 2020 to the Commission through email, and that is ndpsc@nd.gov. The first letters are North Dakota Public Service Commission initialization at nd.gov, or mail it to 600 East Boulevard Avenue, Department 408, Bismarck, North Dakota, 58505-408. You also may provide telephone testimony today, and that may be provided by calling number 701-328-4081, and that is at the bottom left of the screen. You will leave your information for callback when it is the appropriate time to provide public testimony. The issues today are in the notice of filing and notice of hearing for this hearing. The first one is as it relates to the waiver of procedures and time schedules. The issues to be considered are the proposed facilities of such length, design, location, or purpose that they will produce minimal adverse effects, and that adherence to applicable procedures and time schedules may be waived. And number two, is it appropriate for the Commission to waive any procedures and time schedules as requested in the application? As to the certificate of site compatibility, the issues to be considered are, one, will the location and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Number two, are the proposed facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and efficient use of resources? And number three, will the proposed facility location minimize adverse human and environment impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? Mr. Bender, would you make your appearance, please? And tell me about the witnesses you expect to call today.
Certainly. Thank you, Your Honor. Commissioners, Lawrence Bender, P.O. Box 1855, Bismarck, North Dakota, appearing on behalf of the applicant in this matter, OE2 North LLC. Your Honor, the applicant intends on offering one exhibit in this case and then two witnesses. Our first witness will be Mr. Andrew Perdue. Perdue is P-E-R-D-U-E, and Mr. Perdue will be offering some testimony as to the ownership of this gas plant, the purpose of constructing the gas plant, engineering and operational design, construction, operation and maintenance, emergency response, and decommissioning. The second witness that OE2 intends to call is Nan Elzinga. Ms. Elzinga will be offering an overview of the environmental site analysis that was done on this. And she'll also be offering some testimony with respect to how her work in this on this application complies with the statutes, rules, and regulations of the commission. She's going to provide some testimony as to consultation with other agencies and governmental entities. And then finally, she's going to, based on that testimony and review, she's going to provide some conclusions that she has reached in this matter.
Mr. Schmidt, would you make your appearance?
Good morning, Senator. Your Honor. My name is Ryan Schmidt.
Could you start just one more time? You're a little bit behind. You're getting the internet connection isn't good yet. So start again, please. You're pixelated right now, so you're having a little troubles with your internet. Okay, hold
maybe
on.
Maybe Brian should call in on the line, too.
Yeah, maybe you should call in on the line as well. That was like you were on auto-tune.
Your Honor, this is Randy.
Yes, Commissioner Chris.
You guys.
Commissioner Chrisman, I can hear you now.
Thank you.
Very clear.
Your Honor, while we're waiting for Mr. Schmidt to call in, would it be appropriate to see if what the quality of the sound is from my two witnesses so that if it's poor, they could call in as well rather than and then not waste any time?
We tested them.
This is Brian Schmidt.
Hello, Mr. Schmidt. You sound
very... I think that might...
Is he coming through both ways? Through.
He was.
Okay. Oh, now he disappeared.
Okay, I took myself. I'm going to exit the GoToMeeting.
You're very clear this way.
Yeah.
So if you'd make your appearance.
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Brian Schmidt, Special Assistant Attorney General here on behalf of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. With me remotely is Adam Renfant, a public utilities analyst for the PSC, and we will request that Mr. Renfant be afforded the opportunity to ask questions if he so desires.
Any objection?
No objection, Your Honor.
He'll be allowed to ask questions. As to public testimony here today, we're going to allow it written and verbal, and I encourage you to take the opportunity to tell the commissioners anything that you think is important. I assure you that what you have to say is important and will be considered by the commission. If you have any questions about providing some sort of document, map, photo, or the like, please provide it to the aforementioned email address, which was ndpsc@nd.gov, and mention it when you call in. That way it can be brought up while you're speaking. Again, you may call in at 701-328-4081 and be placed on the callback list. It is now time for opening remarks by the commissioners. Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Okay. Hi, Judge. Can you hear me?
Yes. Very clear.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for gathering in this way this morning. Despite a couple of technical challenges, I think the main thing that we need to have today is the ability to hear each other. And it sounds like through the phone, we're able to do that. So We will proceed as best we can and appreciate everybody's flexibility in addressing this hearing and taking care of this business in this way. This is a significant new proposed project. When the oil industry bounces back from this down spell, we know that natural gas production will pick up again, and plants like this are going to be vital. And so we appreciate the company's interest and investment in our state and want to proceed as, you know, thoroughly and efficiently as possible to review this project and get them a decision on whether or not this meets the siting requirements. And so that's the purpose of today. We'll look at minimal impact and see what the, you know, how the project measures up to that standard in this location, and look forward to any public input that might be out there or concerns, anything that folks living in and around this area might have in regards to this proposed project, so that we can take all of those factors into consideration in the ultimate permitting decision. So thank you very much for participating today. Look forward to a productive hearing.
Commissioner Crosius.
Good morning, everyone, as well. Thank you for being on the call, and obviously we've got a few hiccups this morning, but I think we're getting through that appropriately, and then we'll be able to get into the presentation of the evidence, which I'm looking forward to. I, too, am excited about the prospect, especially at a time when many companies are decreasing capital expenditures. So this certainly helps. It's another piece of the puzzle, if approved, to help capture more natural gas that's being produced in the Bakken, and that, of course, helps to support drilling activity overall, as well as monetizing a product and capitalizing on a product that currently is being flared. So look forward to the morning ahead, and if we go into the afternoon on this, I think it looks pretty straightforward, but we'll find out as we listen to the witnesses. And again, thank you. Appreciate it.
Commissioner Chrisman.
Good morning, Your Honor, and everyone who's listening. Ditto what's been said. I'll just add to it that I wish we were up in Williams County. And if anyone has comments or concerns or questions, we could be looking at you face to face. But in this time, this is the best that can be done. I like this application. I thought the information is provided clearly, and most of the things that I was wondering at first are answered within the application. And so that's a good thing. I do want to point out to people that are monitoring this in various electronic formats that we do still want to hear from you if you have questions or concerns. It's important. That's why we typically would be up there. It helps us to make the best possible decision when we have all the information. And sometimes it's a neighbor or someone who's just familiar with the area that sees something that even the company doesn't, because they don't know the area as well. And so it is important to us. The last thing I want to emphasize, and it may not be a factor in this case, in a previous hearing that we did electronically, some people had filed comments in advance, and those go into a public input file, but they're not really docketed as part of the case officially. The time for that is from the hearing going forward a few days. And I don't believe there were any comments that came in on this case, but if there are, and I'm just not aware of them, and if you want them to actually be docketed and become part of the record, you'll need to resubmit them. So with that, I'm ready to hear from the witnesses.
Mr. Bender, are there any preliminary matters or motions?
Just a preliminary matter, Your Honor. You may recall during our pre-hearing conference, I'd indicated that I was going to or had already filed the exhibit, pre-filed the exhibit We would request that foundation be waived on that and that Exhibit 1, which was pre-filed, be admitted into evidence.
Mr. Schmidt?
No objection, Your Honor.
Since there's no objection, I have marked and have admitted Exhibit number 1 into evidence. Mr. Bender, you may call your first witness.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Our first witness is Andrew Perdue.
Mr. Perdue.
Yes, I'm here.
I'm required by law to tell you the penalties for perjury in this state. Perjury is a Class C felony punishable by a fine of up to $10,000 or a term of imprisonment of up to 5 years or both. Do you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
Yes.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Mr. Bender, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Andrew, would you state your full name for the record, please?
It's Andrew Perdue.
And Mr. Perdue, or Andrew, by whom are you employed?
I'm employed by Outrigger Energy 2, LLC.
Okay. And can you tell us the relationship between Outrigger Energy 2, LLC, and the applicant in this matter, OE2 North, LLC?
Yes, the applicant, OE2 North, LLC, is a wholly owned subsidiary of Outrigger Energy 2, LLC.
And what is your business address?
It's 1200 17th Street, Suite 900 in Denver, Colorado, 80202.
And can you briefly describe for us your educational background and work experience?
Yes, as far as education goes, I have a Bachelor of Science in Chemical Engineering from the Colorado School of Mines, and also a Master of Science in Chemical Engineering, also from the School of Mines. As far as work experience, I have about 10 years of experience in all aspects of oil and gas midstream development, which includes facility siting, environmental permitting, engineering, construction, commissioning, and operations. This experience particularly includes the front-end development, construction, and safe commissioning and operation of 4 gas processing facilities while employed here at Outrigger. I'm also a trained OSHA PSM facilitator, and I've served as the lead engineer and project manager for hundreds of miles of pipeline projects and managed the construction and operation of over 150 million standard cubic feet per day of natural gas processing capacity.
And what's your current position, what's your current position with Outrigger?
I'm currently the Director of Operations and Engineering.
And what are some of your duties with regard to that position?
I personally oversee all aspects of Outrigger Energy's operational assets. This includes the safety, reliability, and efficiency of our pipeline and processing assets. And I also oversee all permitting, engineering, and construction for Outrigger's natural gas processing facilities.
And what was your role with respect to the gas plant that Outrigger or OET is seeking approval from the commission?
I'm personally overseeing all aspects of execution for the project. This includes facility siting, permitting, engineering, construction, commissioning, and eventually ongoing operation of the processing facility.
And who will own the gas plant if the commission approves the application and the plant is constructed and becomes operational?
Yeah, the project and plant will be owned and operated by OE2 North, LLC.
Okay. Now, you talked just a little bit earlier about some of your work experience. Let's talk about specifically Outrigger's experience and capabilities of constructing and operating a gas plant.
Sure. Outrigger is a Denver-based midstream energy company, currently with a focus in the Denver, Julesburg, and Williston basins in Colorado and North Dakota, respectively. We have a long history of midstream development all through the 48 states. Our services include natural gas gathering, compression, processing and treating, NGL fractionation, crude oil and water gathering, and comprehensive marketing services. We strive to provide our producer customers with the infrastructure and services necessary to deliver their production to market in a timely, safe, and efficient manner.
Okay. So Outrigger does things in addition to building and constructing gas plants. They do some of the other things that you just mentioned. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, that's true. We also are currently operating a crude oil gathering system here in the DJ. And then we do ancillary services around the gas processing systems, including compression, treating, dehydration, and gathering.
Will this gas plant, if approved, will that be your first introduction into the Williston Basin of North Dakota?
Personally, no, and not really for most of the Outrigger team as well. I've worked up in the Williston Basin before, actually in Williams County. Back 8 years ago, I was actively managing a crude oil gathering project up there for Bear Tracker Energy, which was eventually bought and is currently being operated by Summit Midstream.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about this project. Can you just give us a general description of the project?
Yes, we're proposing to construct the Bill Sanderson Gas Processing Plant that will consist of a gas processing plant with a nameplate capacity of 250 million standard cubic feet of gas per day. The plant will essentially process raw wellhead gas produced from wells in Williams County and the surrounding areas from a gas gathering system owned and operated by OE2. The project will deliver marketable natural gas and natural gas liquids, or NGLs, to third-party interstate natural gas and NGL pipelines that service the Rocky Mountains, Midwest, and Gulf regions.
Okay, now I'm going to refer you to Exhibit 1, and particularly page OE2010, and some of the commissioners may not have the exhibit with the base stamp numbers on it. So I believe that's also figure one. Could you tell us, is figure one or OE2010, is that an accurate depiction of the location of the facility?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and can you briefly describe where that facility will be located if the commission approves OE2's application?
Yes, the facility will be located about 15 miles west of Williston in Section 27, Township 154 North, Range 104 West in Williams County, on a 39-acre property currently owned by OE2 North. The project site is located just south of Highway 2, right near the North Dakota-Montana border, just on the North Dakota side.
Okay. Now let's go to, once again, in Exhibit 1, and go to pages OE2, 39, 40, and 41 of Exhibit 1. And can you tell us what those exhibits are? Or excuse me, those pages of the exhibit.
Yeah, it's basically a site plot plan showing how our equipment will be staged within our property or our proposed site for this project.
Okay, and for those commissioners who don't have the exhibit in front of them, how are they designated? So if they want to take a look at them, how would they find them quickly?
Yeah, they could just go to those pages and take a look at it. But in general, there's some diamonds located on the equipment that shows kind of where various processing equipment is located within the site. And that is basically, we have a legend on each one of those plot plans that shows details around where equipment is going to be located within the processing facility.
And they're all labeled as plot plans, is that correct?
Yes, they're all labeled as plot plans.
Okay. Can you discuss for us, and some of the commissioners actually talked a little bit about this in their opening statements, but can you discuss for us the need for this this project?
Yes. As we all know, oil and gas exploration and production has outpaced midstream development in gathering and processing, which has resulted in wellhead flaring across the state. Based on historical production data from the North Dakota Oil and Gas Division, statewide flaring has actually increased over 8 times from the years of November 2009 to November of 2019, as the pace of upstream development has outpaced midstream development takeaway capacity. As a result, more gathering and processing systems, such as the proposed project, are required to serve the need of producers across the state. The project will drastically improve the ability of OE2's upstream customers to economically continue oil and gas production in Williams County and surrounding areas. And the project will provide additional processing capacity, further reduce trucking, and will help minimize future flaring as more wells are completed and tied into the gathering system. So really, we see the project as both economically and environmentally beneficial.
Okay, the gas plant will obviously serve the Williston Basin generally, but can you be just a little bit more specific as to what area this plant will serve if it's approved, constructed?
Yes, so wellhead gas will basically be gathered along a gathering pipeline system that we're building throughout Williams County, North Dakota, and as required, we will actually expand that gathering system into some surrounding counties as well as the need grows.
And in terms of the residue gas that'll come out of the tailgate of the plant, what's the destination for that residue gas?
Yeah, the residue gas, once processed, will be transferred to the Northern Border Pipeline System, which will ultimately serve markets in the Rocky Mountains, Midwest, and Gulf region.
Okay, and the Bakken gas, generally speaking, is rich in liquids. Presumably, there'll be some NGLs that'll be produced as a result of the processing. Where will those NGLs go?
Once processed, the NGL product will be transferred to the One Oak Pipeline System, ultimately serving kind of the same market general areas in the Rockies, Midwest, and Gulf regions as well.
Okay, and I know you were generally, you're generally familiar with how this site was selected. Can you tell us what factors went into consideration when OE2 selected the site?
Yes, we did consider a number of factors through our site analysis process. That included coordination with landowners in the area, local officials, agencies, and existing infrastructure owners, our customers' production, product market outlets, pipeline takeaway capacity in the area, federal, state, and local regulatory requirements, various environmental considerations, including topography, available soils on site, the hydrology of the area, wildlife and cultural considerations. The site is located in a sparsely populated area with very willing stakeholders all around us and appropriate setbacks from any sort of residential properties. Utility access, road access, cost feasibility, complying with the commission siting criteria, including exclusion areas, avoidance areas, selection and policy criteria, co-locating with existing infrastructure where possible, avoiding and minimizing potential impacts to existing infrastructure, landowners, and environmentally sensitive areas, and ensuring constructability and maximizing operational efficiencies while minimizing safety concerns.
And in terms of those environmental considerations and some of the criteria that are required by the commission statutes and rules, the next witness is going to get into that in a little bit further detail. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Who owns the land that you would utilize if this gas plant is approved and is built?
OE2 North does own the 143-acre parcel upon which the 39-acre site for the project is located.
And will is that a sufficient amount of land to build this project, or will OE2 be required to acquire additional property?
No, not for the processing plant itself.
And do you know, has OE2 obtained a conditional use permit from Williams County for this plant?
Yes, we have.
Do you know when that was obtained? Was it recently or?
It was recently. We had our board hearing for approval on April 7th this month.
And were you involved in that process?
Yes, I was.
If this application is approved, how will OE2 keep landowners in the area informed of the construction schedule for the plant?
As previously stated, OE2 does own the parcel of land where the project will be located, so that will alleviate any need to directly consult with the immediate landowner, of course. As to nearby landowners and tenants, we've been in constant communication with them and will inform them of anticipated construction date in advance of the start of construction, and also continue that relationship through operations as well.
Are you aware of any objections to the proposal of OE2 to construct this gas plant?
No objections have been expressed or made known to OE2.
All right, let's talk just a little bit about engineering and operational design. You've been involved in that aspect of this plant, is that correct?
Yes.
And could you describe for us the technologies that are going to be utilized in this gas plant if the application is granted and the plant is constructed?
Yes, the plant will consist of one gas processing train with a nameplate capacity of 250 million standard cubic feet per day that will process wellhead natural gas. The plant will include a flood catcher, a liquid stabilization system, a recycled split vapor or RSV cryogenic gas processing facility, and residue compression to boost the residue gas to interstate pipeline pressures. This processing mechanism enables separation of the various components of the mixed gas entering the plant into products such as residue gas and Y-grade NGLs. The natural gas will be transported to the plant for processing via OE2's gathering system. The residue gas will be transported from the plant via the Northern Border Pipeline system, and NGLs will be transported from the plant via the One Oak Pipeline system, as mentioned before.
You're kind of fading out at the end there, Andrew, if you could maybe stay close to the mic even as you conclude your testimony, that would be helpful, I believe.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. Let's turn back to those plot plans, particularly OE2, 042 and 043. I mean, there's a lot of information on there, so I don't want you to go into a great amount of detail, but I'd like you to describe some of the more important components of this plant.
Sure. So in general, construction of the plant will include installation of underground and above ground piping, and also a bunch of above ground gas processing equipment and systems. Those major systems, as you mentioned, are located within the overall site plan, and more specifically on pages marked OE2042 and OE2043 of Exhibit 1. The major systems include the inlet gas flood catcher, our inlet liquid stabilization and filtration systems, molecular sieve dehydration, which removes water out of the gas, NGL extraction, including refrigeration, the high pressure residue gas compression to boost the product gas up to interstate pipeline pressure, NGL product storage and pipeline pumps, as well as a number of utility systems, including an emergency flare system, electrical systems, instrument air, and heat medium system.
And are these the typical components that one would see in a gas plant that's constructed in this day and time?
Yes.
Right. And will the gas plant, in terms of design, construction, and operation, be in compliance with applicable local, state, and federal regulations?
Yes. It will be designed, constructed, and operated to meet or exceed all applicable local, state, and federal laws and regulations. Also, the project will be constructed in accordance with accepted gas processing industry guidance, such as certain API and ASME standards.
And briefly, Andrew, can you provide for us a anticipated schedule for the construction and in-service date of the project if it's approved?
Yes. These dates are approximate and could change based on receipts of the applicable authorizations and approvals, but OE2 currently has plans to begin construction in May 2020, obviously depending on the issuance of required permits and approvals. We anticipate construction to be complete by December of 2020. We anticipate testing our operations in December of 2020 and then commencing commercial production by the end of the year in 2020.
Now, Commissioner Crosius, in his opening statement, briefly discussed the fact that, you know, we've had some changed circumstances in the last few weeks. How will any of that, if any, have any impact on your proposal to construct this in terms of timing?
I won't have any impact at all. We are still pushing full speed ahead on the project, and we are really excited to be doing a project of this size and benefiting the economy during this downturn.
Okay. And can you tell us once again briefly what pipelines will be connected to the project?
Yes. The plant will interconnect with existing third-party interstate natural gas and NGL pipelines on Northern Border and One Oak, respectively, that serve markets in the Rocky Mountain, Midwest, and Gulf regions. And the project will receive unprocessed wellhead natural gas via OE2's gathering pipeline system.
And do you anticipate any other gathering lines being constructed or being necessary to construct if this application is granted and the project goes forward of building the plant?
No, not at this time.
Okay. What about transmission lines? Does OE2 anticipate constructing any pipelines to the project that would require commission approval because they are transmission lines rather than gathering lines?
Yes, we will have two takeaway pipelines that are both under 5 miles in length, which will require commission approval and the issuance of certificates of corridor compatibility and route permits. Basically, we'll have one pipeline for each product leaving the plant. So the residue gas pipeline will transport product gas from our facility to the existing Northern Border pipeline, which is less than 5 miles away. And the NGL pipeline will transport product NGLs from the processing facility to the existing One Oak pipeline, which is only about 1 mile away from the proposed project site. Each of these pipelines will utilize existing corridors and will parallel existing infrastructure as well.
With all the exploration activity that's taking place in western North Dakota, roads always become an issue, both the construction and maintenance of the same. Will any roads need to be constructed for this project?
No new roads will be constructed. However, we have agreed with the county to improve and maintain the existing 2-mile dirt road from County Road 5 into the subject processing facility.
And what's the anticipated cost of this proposed gas plant?
The total cost of the project is estimated to be approximately $150 million.
And at this point in time, Are there plans down the road to expand, or at this point in time, do you believe that the 150, or excuse me, the 200, I can't remember now, that the plant capacity that you're proposing is going to be sufficient?
Yeah, at this point in time, we have no future expansion currently anticipated, and we believe the 250 million a day capacity will be sufficient.
But of course, plans could change, and if the product was there, that would probably be good news for the company. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, that is a fair statement. And, you know, we do constantly look at potential means for expansion and sites either within our owned property or within nearby properties. So we have taken all that into consideration as well. But at this time, we just have the firm plans for the 250 million a day plant.
Okay, thank you. Let's talk a little bit about operation and maintenance. Can you discuss for us how the project will be operated?
Yes, the plant will be operated by 12 full-time operators trained to OSHA's Process Safety Management, or PSM, standards regarding safety training and operational procedures. The plant will be attended 24 hours a day, every day of the year, and operators will be working 12-hour shifts and have support as required for management, engineering, technicians, and mechanics.
And what's going to be involved in the operation and maintenance of the gas plant if it's constructed?
Yep, so to operate the plant, we're actually going to hire 12 new full-time employees. And then regarding construction of the project, construction is more of a specialized niche market. And accordingly, the labor force needed to build the plant will be comprised of a mix of local and non-local workforce. OE2 has selected Zapp Engineering as its primary general contractor for construction of the project. And we are strongly encouraging the use of local skilled and unskilled labor force as well for the project. We do have a local labor force that's contracted to do the dirt work on site and the fencing. The workforce will typically engage about 80 individuals on the construction side. We do expect peak activity where the construction workforce will increase to levels of up to 260 individuals.
Okay, in terms of operational oversight, inspections, that will be conducted. When will that occur?
Yeah, so we will retain inspection oversight directly and through third party to ensure compliance with all applicable rules, regulations, and permit certificate conditions throughout pre-construction, construction, and operations as needed. Inspection services will be retained, obviously, through construction, heavily, and then we'll ultimately transition to some of our operations staff, inclusive of any environmental responsibilities. We'll also have safety inspectors on site throughout active construction, and then OE2 employees will oversee safety once the plant is operational. OE2's management and environmental staff will oversee all aspects of construction to ensure compliance with all of OE2's environmental practices, including those required by local, state, and federal regulations.
And if the plant is constructed, what steps will be taken to ensure that the plant is operating properly?
Yes, we have site-specific operations and maintenance procedures that will be applied to this project and the plant. As previously stated, the plant will be attended 24 hours a day, and operators will be working 12-hour shifts with support for management, engineering, technicians, and mechanics. Outrigger's operations team will conduct daily rounds all throughout the facility to monitor all aspects of the facility's equipment and basically ensure equipment is reliably operating smoothly and on. Outrigger does have a well-documented mechanical integrity program as well to ensure the facility continues to operate efficiently and safely through the lifetime of the facility. We also utilize a site-specific programmable logic controller, or PLC, which is basically the automated brain of the facility. That PLC monitors key process and safety variables within the plant Local operators and remote support staff alike control key operating aspects of the facility at any time through this PLC. And the PLC will notify local operators and potentially shut off pieces of equipment if required to maintain the safety and reliability of the processing facility's operations. Automatic alarms and shutoffs in that PLC are designed and periodically reviewed by Outrigger's engineering, operations, and management team to ensure that the facility is operating efficiently and safely.
And you've previously testified that in terms of selecting the site, you did some study and review as to where the site was in relationship to populated areas and that sort of thing. Now that the site has been selected, if you go forward to build a plant, what measures are you going to take with respect to public awareness of the facility?
Yeah, in general, we have worked really hard on this project to establish a good relationship with local residents and tenants, farmers in the area. We retain in-house agents who act as liaisons to those landowners. We're going to be really, really mindful to maintain contact with nearby landowners, especially throughout construction when there will be higher periods of traffic. And then we've been working hand in hand with local government officials, including Williams County, throughout the project, and we'll continue to exchange information about the project. And in general, if any concerns arise, OE2 will work with officials or surrounding property owners to resolve those issues. We strive to be a good neighbor in the communities we invest in, and we really don't take that effort lightly.
Okay, and emergency response, that issue is always important to the commission as well as the local people, the political subdivisions in the area. What steps will OE2 take to prepare for a potential emergency situation at the plant if such would occur?
Yes. In general, OE2 governs operations and construction activities with safe work procedures designed to protect property, persons, and the environment while maintaining regulatory compliance. As I mentioned before, safety inspectors will be on site throughout active construction, and an OE2 employee will oversee safety once the plant is operational. Contractors will be required to comply with all permits, as well as local, state, and federal regulations governing the work. In particular, regarding the emergency action plan, we do have a developed plan that outlines specific protocols to be implemented for the scope of this project, and that emergency action plan can be referenced in Exhibit 1. Page OE2-177. We will supplement the existing emergency response measures as necessary to address any sort of potential emergency situation specifically applicable to the project.
So will OE2 coordinate with first responders regarding potential emergency situations at the facility? Before the facility goes into operation?
Yes, typically before operation, we invite all of the local emergency responders out to the plant to do a good walk through the plant, go through emergency response procedures with them, and just talk about kind of areas to basically quarantine off, so to speak, in the event of the most serious emergency. Those local agencies will include the Williston Rural Fire Department, the Williston Rural Fire Protection District, the Williams County Sheriff, and the Williams County Emergency Management Department. On top of that pre-operation meeting with all the emergency responders, we do perform an emergency deployment drill on site every year, and biannually we do tabletop emergency response training for operations staff just to make sure everyone is well aware of what steps to take during an emergency.
And are there any other emergency or mitigation type measures that OE2 has taken into consideration that you'd like to discuss for us?
Yes, we do also have a stormwater pollution prevention plan that has been developed for the project. That plan is included in Exhibit 1, page OE2-251. The Stormwater Pollution Prevention Plan outlines best management practices to minimize erosion, any sort of sedimentation from stormwater runoff, and outlines operational controls and inspections as well. And that stormwater plan and all inspection records will be maintained on site throughout the duration of the project.
Okay, let's switch gears just a little bit. You know, something that will ultimately take place many years down the road, but let's talk about decommissioning and restoration of the site if this project goes forward. And in conjunction with that discussion, touch on what you believe the estimated life of the project will be and how you'll go about restoring the area after after the plant is decommissioned.
Sure. Construction activities are anticipated to occur over an approximately 8-month period. The plant is then anticipated to be operated as long as demand is sufficient to run the plant. And if decommissioning is required, we in general will follow all applicable rules and regulations for final reclamation of the property.
Do you have any idea at this point in time in terms of the life of the plant? I know you've indicated so long as there's natural gas in the area, but is a plant like this, is the life 20 years, 30 years, 40 years? And if it's longer, do you have to do some major renovations of the plant down the road?
Yes, I mean, the life of these plants can be 40 years plus in general terms, especially a plant of this size. And so we do have a mechanical integrity program, which basically guides preventative maintenance as well as maintenance that would require like a complete change out of an existing or older piece of equipment. So basically our mechanical integrity program guides preventative maintenance and any sort of required maintenance because of age throughout the life of the plant.
Okay. So finally, let's talk just a little bit about what some of the benefits are of this plant. You touched on them earlier, you know, flaring can be reduced and, you know, natural gas that's produced in the area is going to be gathered and it should allow for you know, additional exploration, but touch on a few more or summarize those for us again.
Yes, in general, the project will provide a substantial amount of processing capacity for the region and will feed marketable natural gas and NGLs as products into existing third-party interstate natural gas and NGL pipelines that service the Rocky Mountains, Midwest, and Gulf regions. The project is both economically and environmentally beneficial for the state, as the project will not only add valuable midstream services for exploration and production companies in the region, but it will also significantly reduce flaring and associated volatile organic compound or VOC emissions in the state. In particular, at nameplate capacity, the plant is expected to reduce statewide VOC emissions by approximately 25,000 tons per year through such flaring reduction.
Thank you, Mr. Perdue. Your Honor, Commissioners, that's all the questions I have for this witness at this time.
I think at this time we'll take a 5-minute break and come back with the cross-examination of Mr. Perdue by Mr. Schmidt. We'll take a 5-minute break and be back a little bit before 5 after. We're at recess. Ready to begin. We're back on the record. Can everyone hear me? Give me a thumbs up if you can from the commissioners. All three. Perfect. We're at that point for the cross-examination of Mr. Perdue by Mr. Schmidt. Mr. Schmidt, are you on the line?
I am. Thank you, Your Honor.
You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Perdue.
Good morning.
You covered quite a bit of stuff in your direct examination. I do have a couple questions for you on cross. And I know Mr. Bender was referencing page numbers during your testimony, and they're the base stamp numbers in the bottom right-hand corner of exhibit number 1. And just for clarity to anyone who might be listening or anyone who doesn't have the exhibits in front of them, exhibit number one was filed with docket number 28 prior to today's hearing. So that's where this information can be found. But anyway, Mr. Purdue, can I please have you turn to page 10? That'd be OE2010. Let me move you there.
Yes, I'm there.
Okay, and I'm looking at this map. It has a big red circle around it and then a black figure in the middle of it that's identified as the facility boundary. There's some stuff in the map. It looks like it's very light gray. Can you explain what that light gray stuff is?
Yes, the light gray stuff within the facility basically marks the road around the facility and the equipment within the facility. So that light gray area is essentially the graded area, and then the darker black area will be the fenced-in area for the plant.
And there's no infrastructure currently on this location, is that correct?
No, it is native grassland right now.
Is it actually being used as ranch land? Do you know what the use of it is right now?
I don't know. I don't believe it is. OE2 actually owns the property. To my knowledge, we aren't leasing it to anyone.
You know what was being used before OE2 purchased the property?
I don't believe it was being used for anything. There's some farms in the area to the south and to the east. I don't know. To my knowledge, you know, I don't know if there was ever, you know, this land was ever used as pasture land.
Can I have you turn to page 45? Let me know when you're there.
Yes, I'm there.
This is another map. It shows the facility boundary and the study area. But what I'm curious about is north of the facility boundary, there's an area that's highlighted in yellow, and that indicates tribal land. Do you know which tribe owns this land?
I'll have to refer you to Trent Taylor, our director of land, and maybe we can follow up with a response on that after the next break. We do know who owns that land. I believe it's an allotted land, and we have been in communication with the allottee on that land.
I guess my question is, was any of the land that you purchased for the purpose of constructing this facility purchased from the tribe?
No, it was not.
During your direct testimony, you talked about the nameplate capacity of the project, and on page 9 of the application, it indicates that this project will reduce statewide VOC emissions by approximately 25,000 tons per year. I guess my question is, will this plant ever operate at nameplate capacity?
Yes, we do anticipate at some point in the future the plant will operate at nameplate capacity. At initial startup, it probably will not, but we do anticipate that demand will grow through the region enough to fill up the plant.
Do you have any estimate as to what percentage of nameplate capacity the project will operate at once it becomes operational?
You know, it's still to be determined with the downturn. Our customers' plans are changing day by day, as you can imagine. So we really don't have a good feel for what it's going to look like at the end of the year when this proposed facility becomes operational just yet.
Have you turned to page 13? This page outlines the proposed schedule, at least as of the date of this application. And I know you talked about this a little bit with Mr. Bender during your direct testimony, but I understand from your direct testimony that you're hoping to begin construction by May of 2020. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And that's different than the construction start date that's listed in the application, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Are the remaining schedule items on page 5 still pretty much intact, or should we be looking at different dates on the rest of those as well?
The remaining dates are pretty much intact. Obviously, we have pushed out the construction start date a little bit, but we're still pushing to end the bulk of construction by December 1st. And then we hope to commence commercial production by December 15th.
With respect to the construction of the plant, I understand from your direct testimony that OE2 North has hired Zap Engineering to be the prime contractor. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And then you'll have, an inspection team who's going to be overseeing the construction of the project. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Will OE2 North LLC have any boots on the ground out there to monitor exactly what's going on while this project's being constructed?
Yes, we will have boots on the ground. So we do employ a third-party construction manager, but he's really a contract employee to Outrigger Energy Direct, more or less. He was actually a construction manager for 3 previous gas plants that we have built. And then we also have a project engineer dedicated to the project who is a direct Outrigger employee who will be overseeing the project as well.
So OE2 North will have substantial control over what's happening during the construction of this project. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Once this project is completed, I understand that there's going to be 12 full-time employees on site who are basically managing the operations of the project. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Who will those 12 full-time employees be employed by?
They will all be employed by Outrigger Energy, too.
And during your direct, you explained that this plant is going to be monitored through remote means as well. Is that correct?
Yes, we will have provisions to monitor the plant remotely.
Where does the remote monitoring take place? I guess, where's the headquarters for that?
So the headquarters are actually really at the plant. There will be a control room at the plant where the server is located. So that server will house basically the brains for the communication system for the plant. Operators who work normally in the control system, if they get a call out, they can actually log into the server at the plant and view what we call the human machine interface of the PLC from their home or from anywhere with internet access. But the main control center will be at the plant.
So basically anywhere in the world that something can be done to access that server and make changes in case there's an emergency and something needs to be done offsite. Is that accurate?
Yes, that is accurate.
You touched on this again during your direct with Mr. Bender about the fact that no new roads will need to be constructed for this project to move forward. And I noted in your application that OE2 was working with surrounding landowners, farmers, the county, and the township to ensure that the traffic increases from this project did not result in any negative impacts to road infrastructure. Now, I know you said that you reached an agreement with the county to improve the road, but what anticipated problems or additional wear and tear do you anticipate to happen on that road?
Yeah, so in general, just through construction, through the heavier periods of traffic, we expect the road to basically just break down a little bit in terms of the surface of the road. So as a result, we reached agreement with both the township and the county to improve and then maintain that road moving forward, since we'll be using it more than anyone else.
So basically, after this project is completed, the road will be back to the shape it was in before you ever started construction. Is that fair to say?
It'll be in better shape than it is now.
Okay. Am I correct that the nearest resident to the proposed project is 1.2 miles away?
Yes, that is correct.
And were they, have they been contacted by OE2 North about this project?
To my knowledge, yes.
And you're not aware of any objections from the nearest landowner?
No.
Now, I also understand from your direct testimony, also from the application, that there's going to be two additional pipelines that need to be constructed to, I guess, act as a feeder system to the proposed plant. Is that correct?
So there's two takeaway pipelines, one for each product, that need to be constructed. And then there's one planned gathering pipeline into the facility.
And are these two takeaway pipelines, those are the ones that you described as transmission lines, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And just generally, can you explain where those may go?
Yes, so the NGL line will head straight east out of the plant, and just about 1 mile east of the plant tie into the existing One Oak pipeline. And then the northern border pipeline will follow along the same path, or rather our pipeline that ties into northern border will follow along the same path, 1 mile east, then churn and follow an existing WBI pipeline until it ties into the northern border pipeline about 3 miles south of the plant.
And are those two pipelines that you just described, are those going to be necessary for the operation of this proposed project?
Yes, they will be.
During your direct testimony with Mr. Bender, you indicated that OE2 North obtained a conditional use permit from Williams County on April 7th, but I noted in the application it also indicated there might be some rezoning that's required for this project as well. Was that ever deemed necessary, or has that step been completed?
Yes, that was completed along with the conditional use permit as part of one consolidated hearing at the county level.
County's rezoned the location and issued the conditional use permit, so all that stuff's taken care of by now?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Perdue. My other questions are for the next witness, I believe.
Are you still there, Mr. Perdue?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. Next, we have questions from Commissioner Fedorchek.
All right, great. Thank you. Can you hear me, Judge?
Yes, I can.
Excellent. Mr. Perdue, I didn't quite catch the answer to the last question that Mr. Schmidt asked you about the status of the permitting at the local level.
So he was asking about the county zoning process. So we did have to rezone the subject property, and that process has been completed at the county level. As part of the conditional use permit, we basically ran one consolidated process with Williams County, and Williams County Board of Commissioners approved the conditional use permit and the change of zoning for the subject property. So all that's taken care of.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I just have a couple questions. You mentioned the nearest occupied residence is about 1.2 miles away, and you think that they've been contacted. Can you
confirm or tell me how it would be that they wouldn't have, or you didn't sound entirely sure that they are aware of the project?
Yeah, it'd probably be best if I defer to my director of land on that. So we can either follow up with a response to the PSC just to confirm, or after the next break, I can just confer with him and make sure that we get you the appropriate information there on exactly what has been communicated to them and when.
Sounds great, but they weren't one of the landowners that you purchased land from.
No, not this particular property, no.
Okay. Tell me about the sound and the noise at this facility, not during construction as much as operations. I don't see a lot of conversation about that, or is that going to be addressed by the next witness?
It will be addressed by the next witness.
Okay, very good. We can wait with that then. Frequently we hear about a blast radius when it comes to a project such as this. Can you speak at all to that as it relates to the safety planning and emergency response?
Yes, we have not completed a full blast radius study for this facility yet, but in general, for similar facilities we've operated, the blast radius is typically about 0.5 miles. And so we do consider that threshold in our siting criteria. And given that this is a sparsely populated area and it's not within 0.5 miles of any major highway system, that's a benefit for the project in our opinion.
Okay. Do you own the land within that 0.5 miles of a radius?
We do not own all land within a 0.5 mile radius.
Okay. Do you know if the folks that do are aware or will be aware of that factor or that quality of this facility?
I'm sorry, can you say that question again?
When you complete that blast radius, as part of your safety preparations and emergency response, will you be completing or communicating that information with the folks who do own the land within the blast radius so that they're aware and are, up to speed on any sort of response that you will be doing or that they will be need to be aware of should there be a disaster that would affect them?
Yes, and so in general, at the plant, we will keep a list of contacts for all the surrounding property owners within a mile radius or so. And if there is an emergency situation, we will physically work with the emergency responders to blockade off any perceived blast radius area. And we'll notify all the surrounding property owners as well, including there's a couple well sites located close to the area, so we would notify those operators as well. And then going back to a previous question, my director of land did confirm that we have contacted the nearest resident that lives 1.2 miles away. Her name is Carol Christensen, and we've been upfront about our plans with this project with her.
Very good, thank you. All right, so, and you've been coordinating with the local emergency management. They're up to speed on this project and properly informed that they will need to be prepared to respond as well.
That is correct.
Okay, very good. Do you have, just going in a slightly different direction, you mentioned the two pipes that will need to be constructed. I'm not aware of any applications we've received yet. Do you have a sense of when you might permit and construct those takeaway pipes?
Yes, we should be getting the application in for the two takeaway pipes here within the next 2 weeks or so. And then we're hoping to construct those pipelines late this summer and into fall in order to be commercially operational still by December 15th.
All right. We will watch for those. Thank you. And then do you have firm space secured on the northern border? I'm assuming you do, but my sense is that pipe is getting rather full.
We do have firm space on northern border.
Okay. All right. I think that concludes my questions for now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Crosius.
Thank you, Your Honor. Andrew, can you tell me, and I might hop around just a little bit. A lot of good questions have been asked and answered, so that is good. On the road access, is that off of Highway 2, then it would be 154th Avenue, northwest traveling south, and then west on 49th Street. Is that accurate in terms of access, or is it just on 49th Street all the way to wherever it would tie in?
Yeah, so the access will be 49th Street over to 153rd, which is also known as Williams County Road 5. It's an existing paved road that comes south off Highway 2. And then we'll take that 1 mile south of Highway 2 and then 2 miles west into the site.
So did you say it was 2 miles of total gravel?
Yes, 2 miles of gravel road into the project area.
Are there any farmsteads on either side, north or south of 49th Street?
Yes, there are some existing farms, some existing irrigated land.
Okay, so you'll be passing by in proximity. What type of dust mitigation measures will you implement?
So we do have a dust mitigation plan. Typically, it includes using a mag chloride at a minimum 2 times through the late spring and kind of early fall season, spraying that down on the road at a prescribed rate to mitigate any dust. We may have to do that more often during construction just because of the high volume traffic. But once we go into operation, you know, typically just doing the mag chloride about 2 times during the dusty season is good.
Okay. That's for the entire length of the road, the gravel?
Yes, that's the entire length of 49th Street west of 153rd into our site.
Okay.
We'll be maintaining that whole stretch.
All right. On the transmission lines, I think you had mentioned 5 miles for one to northern border, 1 mile on the other approximately to the One Oak pipeline. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And will they have capacity to, I'm assuming, allow for future expansion should that ever become a possibility on the gas plant itself?
Yes. They will have capacity on their tap. So we did over-design the tap and some of the metering equipment just to get out in front of any sort of expansion that could potentially happen in the future.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me can you go a little deeper into what type of monitoring devices you will have at the plant itself to detect a leak?
Yes, so in general, we will monitor pressure and flow at the plant, both at the plant itself and at the interconnect locations. We will have a fiber optic communication system from the endpoints on the pipeline back to the plant. So we shouldn't have any issues with communications between the two areas, and we will be actively monitoring pressure and flow for leak.
Okay. There was an instance where it was a significant spill. It actually occurred. A lot of times people think it would be pipeline related because that is often the case, but In this particular instance, it was at a gas plant. And what type of, and that was a recently constructed state-of-the-art pipeline, or pipeline, gas plant, excuse me. What type of assurance can you give me that this plant would be able to detect such a leak quickly and the operation could be shut down, or operations could be shut down?
So we do have gas and NGL detectors throughout the facility. So if there were a rupture within the facility, the idea is those gas or NGL detectors would trigger an ESD of the plant and the plant would be shut down. Even at low levels of gas detection, we also have alarms, which would basically alarm the operator that something's going on in that area. And then the operator could take response in an attempt to avoid a more serious situation. Mm-hmm. And then as far as underground lines goes, all of our underground lines are pressure tested prior to operational testing and commissioning. And then we do have a cathodic protection system, which helps to mitigate any external corrosion for the underground lines within that facility as well.
Okay. Can you quantify what a low level release would be?
Really, it's just so the alarm level is like a 20% lower explosive limit. So typically, you know, if you were walking around with like a personal gas monitor, that would go off at that level as well. So it's a pretty low level of gas or NGL detected in the facility that would trigger an alarm.
Okay. I think I just have one additional question. And it's more a curiosity. Oil pads are not within our jurisdiction, but I believe there is, it looks like there would be a pad right across the, well, just to the southeast of the plant, where the plant would be constructed. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Are there any setback or distance requirements from an oil pad?
Not to my knowledge.
I don't think I, well, one last question. When do you anticipate the peak construction to occur from an equipment moving in and out standpoint? And the reason I ask, I don't know, I can see a couple of fields that one in particular appears to be crop production. And what's the busiest time in terms of equipment being trucked in? Or is it generally the same throughout?
Yeah, so the busiest time for heavy equipment being trucked in will be July and August, kind of front end of the construction schedule overall. After that, it'll taper back. It'll be just more like passenger traffic.
And do you communicate that to the farming operations in immediate proximity? Because if they're harvesting at the middle of the beginning of August or middle of August on wheat, for example, they'll be quite busy on the roadway as well. Do you work with them that way?
Yes, we have. And the only farmer who operates out here, either on his own land or through tenant farming, is actually the guy we bought the site from as well. So all that was considered in our negotiations for the property as well.
Oh, okay. So no surprises for them in that respect. And then the construction, that would be for the next witness.
I'm sorry, ask that again. I didn't quite hear the question.
Construction-related questions, that would be for the next witness. Where would that be for you?
That would be for me.
Okay. Do you anticipate any issues workforce concerns. You would think the current environment, unfortunately, that individuals will be looking for work, but is it the right type of skilled labor to complete the task? Do you have any concerns in that respect?
No, we don't have any concerns there. I mean, obviously, with this being a down market, we kind of feel like we're getting hopefully the cream of the crop in terms of the skilled labor for the project.
All right. And then you said there's a focus on local workforce?
Yes. The general contractor is based out of Colorado, but we are encouraging the use of a local workforce, and we do have a contract in place with a local dirt work and fencing contractor, which we're doing that directly with the local contractor.
Okay, thank you, Andrew. No other questions.
Commissioner Christman.
I don't have much left to ask you. Am I right that issues of water discharges from the site would be asked for Ms. Elzinga?
Yes, that would be correct.
Okay, and then the applications for the two discharging pipelines, I think you pretty well gave Commissioner Fedorchak assurance that those apps were coming in soon, but is it your commitment that those pipelines will be done before this plant starts operation so that the product doesn't have to be hauled in and out for a while until the pipelines are completed?
Yes, that's correct. We don't have a means to truck a lot of product out of this facility. So we won't be able to operate this facility without the two takeaway pipelines.
And early on, did you say that you anticipate a 12-person permanent workforce?
Yes.
And you'd mentioned a number of different skill sets that those workers would have, and also that it would be operational 24 hours a day, if I got all my notes correct. That seems like a small workforce to have a variety of skill sets and still be able to cover 24/7. Do you want to comment on that?
I can comment on it. In general, Outrigger does try and maintain a very efficient but highly qualified operational team. We do spend a lot of time, myself personally, vetting everyone on our operations team, whether it's a plant operator, an INE tech, or a mechanic. And just to give you a little more insight as to what we plan for this plant, we'll have basically one day, one night shift operator. On days, there will be basically during normal work hours, that's when we'll do any sort of preventative maintenance, the bulk of our daily rounds, you know, all sorts of work where you might need, you know, two or three guys to help out. Since we'll have probably a foreman, manager, and mechanic, and INE tech all available in there during the day. And then at night, the night shift operator is basically just running the plant and making sure everything's operating smoothly. And if he has a situation where there's something happening that he can't handle by himself, he can call his foreman or the lead operator, and that foreman or lead operator can assist remotely, or they'll also drive out to the site. They'll all be living within a certain radius of the area, and then they can help as needed if it's something more serious going on. So that's how we typically operate, is just a one-day shift, one-night shift operator, and that's how we're able to get down to that 12 full-time employees total.
I think you said that you had worked on the construction of four other processing plants for Outrigger. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Are they about similar in size to this one, the 250 million standard cubic feet?
No, they've all been smaller. The last two we had, one was a 70 million a day, one was a 60 million a day. So they were smaller in capacity, but very similar in technology and very similar in overall process.
Very similar in workforce?
Yes. So this workforce here is tailored after our current operating plant here in Colorado. So we plan a very similar workforce for this plant in North Dakota.
Okay, thank you. Here,
I'm just going to say the plant here in Colorado is manned 24/7 as well, with a very similar number of full-time employees. So that's all I was going to add.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Perdue, this is Judge Dawson. I see that the site is 39 acres and you own 143 acres. What are you doing with the other 104 acres?
So right now we're planning to just leave it as a native grassland. We don't have any immediate plans to do something else with that 104 acres. It's a nice buffer from surrounding property owners, and so we like that, and we plan to leave it that way.
Okay. Mr. Bender, do you have any redirect?
No redirect, Your Honor.
Mr. Schmidt? Any questions?
Nothing for the witness, Your Honor.
That includes you, Mr. Renfant?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, I think I missed you the first time around, so do you have any questions?
No questions, Your Honor.
Okay. If there's no further questions from the commissioners, you may step down. Mr. Bender, you may call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. The applicant calls Nanette Elzinga.
Ms. Elzinga, are you there? What?
I can see her talking.
I can see you talking, but I cannot hear you.
Helps if you take yourself off mute. I apologize. Good morning.
I'm glad it was a simple fix.
Yes.
You were here for my previous admonitions as to perjury?
Yes.
So you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
I do.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Mr. Bender, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Nan, can you please state your full name for the record, please?
Yes. My name is Nanette Elzinga, and I go by Nan.
Okay. And Nan, by whom are you employed?
By Kleinfelder Incorporated.
And what's your business address?
We are located at 1801 California Street, Suite 1100 in Denver, Colorado, 80202.
And could you briefly highlight for us your educational background and work experience?
Yes, I have a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering from Bucknell University. And I have over 31 years of experience, mainly in environmental permitting, review of pipeline and transmission projects. I have done NEPA documentation, environmental construction services, and environmental remediation. My pipeline experience specifically includes preparation of FERC resource reports and applications, environmental assessments, and environmental impact statements. I've also prepared SPCC plans, facility response plans, emergency response plans, and have done many environmental compliance projects.
And what's your current title with Kleinfelder?
My title is Project Manager 3.
And what was your role with respect to the project that is under consideration today by the PSC?
So I am a consultant to OE2 North, and I am the project manager responsible for the preparation of the application and submittal.
Okay, and you were also, primarily responsible for the environmental site analysis that took place for this project. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Can you give us a brief description of the project site? I know that Mr. Perdue talked generally about it. I'd like you to be a little bit more specific with respect to the type of land it is and that sort of thing.
Yes, the project site is primarily characterized as rural and agricultural lands. And as Mr. Perdue said, the project site itself is 39 acres, located on 143 acres that are owned by OE2.
And can you describe the study area for us?
Yes, the study area is defined as the 39-acre parcel that comprises the project site itself and an approximate half-mile wide buffer around the perimeter of the site. And this is depicted in Exhibit 1 on page OE210.
All right. And what was the approach? I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Mr. Bender.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. What was the overall approach that you took with respect to the environmental analysis of this area where this gas plant will be located if it's approved?
So the environmental approach, the overall approach for the environmental analysis is a two-step process. We first conduct a desktop assessment, and that includes available studies and reports, online data sources to assess both the natural resources and the cultural resources, both within the project study area and the site itself. In addition, a second step was conducted where field surveys were conducted for just the project site itself. That was to document both natural resources and cultural resources. And Grouse Mountain environmental consultants were retained by OE2 to do those field studies.
Okay, can you discuss for us just a little bit more about the field studies that were conducted for this project?
Yes. Again, a natural resources desktop analysis was conducted for the entire study area. That included publicly available databases for wetlands and water body inventories, the same for habitat for threatened and endangered species, soils evaluation, and tree shrub evaluation. Then the field surveys were conducted for the project site for the natural resources, and that included identification of wetlands and water bodies, identification of threatened and endangered species habitat, recording noxious weeds, and the tree and shrub survey. In addition, on the cultural resources side, a class one desktop assessment was conducted for the entire study area. And in addition, a class three cultural resource field survey was conducted for the project site, requested by the State Historical Society of North Dakota.
Okay, I'm going to direct your attention to Exhibit 1. Could you turn to Appendix D in Exhibit 1 and tell us what that appendix contains?
Yes, I'm scrolling there now. Appendix D contains the class one cultural resource.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Does that have a bait stamp?
OE2081.
Continue.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your question
again? Can you tell us what's in that appendix, Nan?
Yes, Appendix D contains the Class 1 Cultural Resource Report.
Okay, thank you. Was a Class 3 Cultural Resource Inventory also filed with the Commission?
Yes, that was filed on March 27th. That included the cultural resource inventory and evaluative testing that was done.
Okay, and what about a SHPO concurrence letter? Was that filed with the commission, and can you direct our attention to where that is contained?
Yeah, the concurrence letter from the SHPO is contained in Exhibit 1 on page OE2437.
Of Exhibit 1, is that correct?
That is correct, of Exhibit 1.
Could you please discuss the Class 1 and Class 3 cultural resource inventory findings that were presented in the report and that are included in Appendix D of Exhibit 1?
Yes, there were no new or previously recorded cultural resources sites as part of the Class 1 and Class 3 surveys.
Okay. Now, directing your attention again back to Exhibit 1, can you turn to page 438?
Yes, I'm there.
Okay. And what is that document?
That is a copy of the concurrence letter that was received from the State Historic Preservation Officer. And that letter is dated April 3rd of 2020, concurring that no historic properties are affected by the project.
And there were some wetland and water bodies studies that were done, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and can you direct your attention to Appendix C of the application, which is Exhibit 1? And can you discuss what's contained in Exhibit C? And I don't have, or maybe I do, is that 050, page 050?
I am scrolling there right now, and I will confirm with you that it is 050.
This will be the first time somebody who's operating paperlessly will get to it before me, but I'm happy you can.
I'm a fast scroller.
Yeah, sounds that way.
Let's see, 050. Yes. 050, OE2050, is the Natural Resources Report, Appendix C.
Can you briefly discuss what's in that report?
Yeah, this is the initial desktop assessment that was conducted by Grouse Mountain. And in that report, there were several NWI designated wetlands in the northern half of the parcel boundary. They were classified as intermittent riverine wetlands. Additionally, one NWI wetland extended into the additional survey area to the south. And no NWI or NHD, which is natural hydrology data set, data was present within the southern portion of the parcel. And based on this initial analysis, 14 sampling units were being classified as not wetland areas, and two units, which were designated as sampling unit 9 and sampling unit 13, were classified as unknown features. And those are identified specifically on pages OE2065 and OE2460. Those contain the maps to show those areas.
And where are the sampling units for unit 9 and 13 located in relationship to the project site or where the gas plant will be located if constructed?
So sampling unit 13 is outside the footprint of the project and will not be impacted by the project construction at all. Sampling unit 9 is on the edge of the footprint of the project site, and that one specifically can be seen on page OE2460.
And directing your attention to page 460 or bait stamp 460, what's the difference on that page between the blue shaded area and the red shaded area around the sampling unit?
So the blue shaded area was identified during the desktop assessment conducted by Grouse Mountain. They did go back out to the site to do additional field survey. And when they did that, they determined that the red shaded area, which is a smaller area, showed some indication of potential wetlands, so decreasing that area. That's the difference between the blue and the red.
And how large is that remaining sampling unit boundary that may or may not be a wetland, excuse me?
Yeah, the red boundary area is 0.06 acres, less than 1/10 of an acre total.
Now, while GMEC was unable to determine whether the 0.6 acre area is a wetland or not, are there any indicators that you're aware of whether it is likely to be a wetland or not?
Yeah, GMEC found no indications of an ordinary high water mark within that area, nor immediately downstream of Unit 9. They also had determined continuously receding water levels and an increase in the visible upland vegetation. All of that indicates the lower likelihood of Unit 9 being a wetland.
What measures will OE2 take to minimize impacts to wetlands and water bodies in the proposed construction of this gas plant?
So OE2, two different things. OE2 has developed a stormwater pollution prevention plan, and that is in Exhibit 1, page OE2, starting on page OE2-251, and that outlines the protection of the entire project area, but specifically that site. They also are planning to follow the recommendations from Grouse Mountain regarding that proposed Unit 9, which is avoidance if possible, and if not possible, mitigation of that area.
Okay, thanks. In terms of wildlife surveys, can you discuss for us what findings were reached with respect to wildlife surveys?
Yes, during the desktop assessment, no defined critical habitats were located within the project area. No birds of conservation concern were identified as well. Grouse Mountain did identify six species that may be potentially affected, and that was through the Fish and Wildlife desktop assessment that was conducted, but no critical habitats were designated within the project area. They did further analysis of those six potentially impacted species, and no suitable habitats were located, and that was confirmed with their field surveys.
Even though that was the findings of the wildlife surveys, what measures will OE2 take to avoid or minimize impacts to wildlife in the area?
So specifically regarding raptors and nesting birds, OE2 is committed to conducting pre-construction surveys if construction would be taking place January 15th through September 15th. That's the raptor breeding season. In addition, if construction would be anticipated from April 1st through August 15th, they would conduct ground nesting bird surveys prior to construction.
And based on the study and review that was conducted of wildlife in the area, do you have an opinion as to whether there will be any long-term negative impacts to wildlife if this permit is approved and construction of the plant takes place?
No, there will be no long-term negative impacts to wildlife anticipated.
Can you discuss for us, well, let me back up, a tree and shrub inventory was conducted in this area. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Can you discuss the results of that survey?
Yeah, there was a vegetation inventory summary completed, and that can be found in Exhibit 1, page OE2439. And the identified trees and shrubs would be mitigated in accordance with the Commission's tree and shrub mitigation specifications.
And was there a noxious weed survey also conducted?
Yes, there was. And no noxious weeds were identified in the upland areas of the site. And OE2 has developed a weed management plan to monitor and control noxious weeds. And that plan was submitted to the Commission, and it's part of Exhibit 1 on page OE2-200.
And are you generally familiar with the Commission statutes, rules, and regulations having to do with exclusion areas, avoidance areas, and the selection criteria?
Yes.
Okay. And are there any exclusion areas located within the study area?
No exclusion areas are located within the study area, and that has been indicated on Table 1. On page OE-222 and also OE-223.
And same question with respect to avoidance areas. Are you aware of any avoidance areas located within the study area?
There are no known avoidance areas within the footprint of the project site. There was one NHD mapped intermittent stream within the study area, but that was not within the limit of disturbance of the project.
And in terms of selection criteria, I believe you said you looked at that as well. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Will there be any significant adverse effects resulting from the location, construction, and operation of the gas plant?
No, there will not, and that is contained in section 4.5 of the application. That is beginning on page OE-226 of Exhibit 1.
And in terms of policy criteria, were the policy criteria set forth in the Commission's rules considered and utilized to the extent possible by the applicant when designating the proposed project area?
Yes, and that is contained in section 4.6 of the application, which begins on page OE-229 of Exhibit 1.
Okay, let's switch gears here just a bit and move to consultation that the applicant may have done with other agencies and governmental entities. To your knowledge, did OE-2 consult with local, state, and federal agencies and governmental entities, including those that are identified in the rules and regulations of the Commission?
Yes.
And where are those consultation letters located in Exhibit 1?
So they start on in Section 2.3 of the application, which begins on page OE-214 of Exhibit 1. And Appendix B, E of the application contains copies of all the letters, and that begins on page OE-292 of Exhibit 1.
Has OE-2 consulted with the North Dakota DEQ with regard to permits, in addition to the permit from the PSC that is required for this facility?
Yes, OE-2 is currently engaged with NDDEQ with respect to both air emissions and water discharges for the facility.
And are you aware of any objections?
I'm not aware of any objections. Certain recommendations were made, which will be followed.
And In addition to the formal studies you've discussed, does OE2 have any additional plans to minimize impacts to the environment?
Yes, OE2 has mitigation measures that are discussed in Section 5 of the application, and that begins on page OE233 of Exhibit 1.
Okay, and Andrew was asked some questions by one of the commissioners having to do with noise mitigation. What's OE2 planning to do with respect to mitigating noise from this project?
So OE2 is planning to have the reciprocating compression located within a building and have commercial grade silencers in place. All outside control valves and equipment were designed for maximum allowable site noise. And based on OE2's experience at similar facilities, their noise mitigation design will ensure compliance with all local noise ordinances.
Okay, and as a result of some questioning, Mr. Perdue answered some questions about additional permits that would be required. Is it your understanding that there are some other permits that are going to be required, and you've set forth in Exhibit 1 a table that sets forth those additional permits?
Yes, that is correct. The table that contains that information is on page OE2-249 of Exhibit 1.
Can you just discuss for us what the current status is of obtaining those permits?
Yes, the stormwater notice of intent is complete. The Williams County stormwater permit has been approved by the county. As Mr. Perdue discussed, the Williams County conditional use permit has been approved by the county. The North Dakota DEQ air permit application has been submitted and is in review, and Outrigger is in contact with the permit reviewer and anticipates receiving that draft permit within the next 2 weeks. In addition, the Williams County septic and building permit applications are complete, the septic permit application is complete. The building permit applications will be submitted in May.
Nan, based on your study and review of the exhibits and testimony that you've presented here today and the statutes and rules and regulations that the commission is charged with to consider with respect to these types of applications that are before them today, minimal adverse effects?
Yes, minimal adverse effects.
Yes. And will the location and construction of the facility produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the state of North Dakota?
Yes.
And in your opinion, is the proposed facility compatible with the environmental preservation and efficient use of resources?
Yes.
And finally, in your opinion, will the proposed facility location minimize adverse human environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion?
Yes.
Your Honor, that's all the questions I have of this witness at this time.
Mr. Schmidt, do you have any questions for Ms. Elzinga?
I do, Your Honor. Would now be a good time just to take a 5-minute break?
If a break is wanted, I'll give a 5-minute break. We'll take a 5-minute break and be back here a little past a quarter after. We're at recess. The record, and we're at the portion of the testimony at which Mr. Schmidt will cross-examine Ms. Elzinga. You may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Ms. Elzinga.
Good morning.
Now, I understand that there was a wetland field survey conducted in January of 2020, correct?
Correct.
And during that survey, there was 100% snow cover, and to quote some of the language from the application, all hydrologic indicators for determining waters of the United States were not considered during that survey. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Was there a follow-up survey conducted in March of 2020?
Yes, there was.
So the opinions that you gave with respect to wetland, those are that based on both the field survey that was done in January, March, as well as the desktop studies?
That is correct.
Can I have you turn to the map on page 460?
Yes. Let me scroll there. Okay. I'm looking at the map on page 460.
And there's I'm looking at the larger portion of the map, so below the blown up portion, there's a lot of areas that are outlined in orange on that map. And the orange indicates that it's not a wetland. I guess my question is, why were those areas ever outlined in the first place if they're not wetland?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. They were identified on the original desktop assessment. And then Grouse Mountain confirmed that they are not wetland areas.
Identified as what on the original desktop assessment?
Potential wetland areas. So whenever we start environmental surveys, the database is the first place we start, and then we field confirm we verify whether or not the field conditions show that they are actually wetland or water body areas.
And this might seem like kind of a silly question, but what is your definition of a wetland?
So there's several different factors that come into play, depending upon the soil type, the vegetation type, indicators of ordinary high water mark. So it's all through field verification.
Now, looking at the blown up portion of the map in the upper right-hand corner on page 460. And I know you discussed this a little bit with Mr. Bender, but I'm looking specifically at section 9.
Yes.
On there, where that's still considered to be unknown. So I guess my question is, how is it still unknown whether this is a wetland or not?
Grass Mountain and OE2 are in consultation with the Army Corps of Engineers and to make the final determination.
What if it is a wetland? What will be done?
Then OE2 would follow the recommendations of the Corps of Engineers, and whatever they need to do to be in compliance with the Clean Water Act. So that would likely be mitigation.
Would there be any shift in the proposed project location if Section 9 is found to be a wetland?
I don't know the answer to that question. OE2 and Grouse Mountain will determine that.
I have you turn to table 3 of page 454.
Okay, let me. Okay, I'm looking at table 3.
Okay, now I understand that the table basically indicates whether each sampling unit is or is not a wetland and has some other characteristics of each sampling unit. Is that a fair assessment of this table?
That is correct.
Okay. Now, looking at sampling units 9 and 13, I know they've been described as unknown, but I specifically want to compare sampling unit 9 to sampling unit 6. And it appears that they have the same key vegetative characteristics, correct?
Correct.
And the or the hydric soil presence, it says possible for both of those, correct?
Correct.
So why is sampling unit 9 not, why is it an unknown whether it's a wetland or not? But sampling unit 6 you can definitively say is not a wetland.
So Grouse Mountain did the determination, and I don't know the answer to that question.
Do you know what the percentage of wet signatures means in that table?
I do not.
So if we wanted more information about whether something, whether one of these sample units does or does not meet the Grouse Mountain's definition of a wetland, we'd have to ask Grouse Mountain. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say.
Okay, let's shift gears to wildlife for a couple minutes. And on page 60 of Exhibit 1, it indicates that there are 6 threatened or endangered species that may be potentially affected by the project. However, it also indicates that there are no suitable habitats that are located within the project boundary. So I guess my question is, how could a threatened or endangered species be potentially affected by the project if there's no suitable habitat within the project boundary?
Can you restate the question, please?
Sure. I'm looking at page 60, so maybe that'll help if you're following.
Yeah, I just got there, so I will. It'll be much better to hear the question while I'm looking at page 60. Thank you.
So on page 60, it indicates that there's 6 threatened or endangered species that may be potentially affected by the project. Mm-hmm. However, it also indicates that there's no suitable habitat located within the project boundary. So my question is, what could the effect possibly be on these species if there's no habitat within the project boundary?
Now I understand the question. So the first sentence on in section 4.2, that is indicating that the desktop assessment, so it's the IPAC report that Grouse Mountain pulled, indicated that these species may be potentially affected, and that's by county. And then through further assessment, Grouse Mountain determined, number one, there was no critical habitat within the project area, so they shrank the area down to the project area. And then through further analysis, through visiting the site, they identified that there was no habitat on the site for those 6 species.
One thing that was mentioned during Mr. Purdue's testimony is that this proposed project location is native prairie. Do you recall hearing that?
I do recall hearing that.
And I guess my understanding of native prairie is generally unbroken grassland. Does that comport with your understanding of native prairie?
Yes, it does.
Is that an accurate description of where the proposed project will be located?
Yes.
Has this proposed project area ever been farmed before, you know?
I'm not aware of whether it has or has not.
Do you know if the soil where this proposed project area is located has ever been disturbed before?
I'm not aware.
You mentioned during your direct testimony that since the construction will occur between January 15th and September 15th, that OE2 North has committed to conducting a raptor nesting survey. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Has that survey been conducted yet?
Not that I'm aware of.
You know when that survey will be conducted?
I do not know.
Do you know if there's been anyone who's been out there to look for raptor nests yet to this point?
I'm not aware of whether
what will happen if a raptor nest is found in the proposed project area?
OE2 is committed to meeting the requirements of the bird survey requirements. I don't know right off the top of my head. I don't have them in front of me.
Okay, will the raptor nest survey be filed with the commission after it's complete?
I believe so.
Now, I know that there's also a recommendation that if construction takes place between April 1st and April 15th, a survey should be conducted for ground nesting passerine birds within the construction footprint. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
Has that survey been conducted yet?
No, not that I'm aware of. And typically, companies conduct both of these surveys within 2 weeks of construction.
Once that survey is completed, will it be filed with the commission?
I believe so, yes.
On page 28 of exhibit number one, let me know when you're there.
I'm on page 28.
I'm looking at the animal health and safety paragraph. And the application states that the wildlife currently inhabiting the site are common and are generally mobile. What wildlife are you referencing in the application?
I don't know the answer to that at this time.
So you don't know what currently lives in the place where the proposed project is going to be located if approved?
Not off the top of my head.
So I guess, how would we know whether they're generally mobile or not?
Through further, I would have to look into that further to answer the question accurately.
Okay, and I guess, how would we know whether there'll be a measurable impact to the viability of these populations if we don't know what populations we're talking about?
Through further investigation, we would know the answer to that. I would.
So at this time, you don't know?
At this time, I don't know.
Let's move to some cultural resources. Now, I know you did a cultural resource study was done, and there's SHPO, you get the SHPO concurrence letter that's filed. But I also went over this with Mr. Perdue during his testimony, and I understand that there's tribal land directly north of the project area. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Have there been any consultations with, well, first of all, do you know which tribe owns that land?
I do not know that.
You know if there's been any consultation with any tribal leaders with respect to whether there's any tribal cultural resources that are located in the project area?
I'm not aware if that has been done.
Your Honor, I apologize for interrupting, and I don't know if this should be in the form of an objection. I'd like to point out that sort of a mischaracterization of the testimony that Mr. Perdue gave. It's not tribal land, it's allotted lands. And there's a significant difference between the two. So I think we're going to be talking about this. We should refer to it as allotted lands and not tribal.
I think that's a fair summary of his testimony. Any comment, Mr. Schmidt?
Yeah, I guess just looking at the application on page 46, I'm just going off of what's in the application where it's identified as private land, so that's why I'm using that term. But if there's more to it and a vast distinction between what's in the application and what the project area, or I guess the area north of the project area actually is, I'm fine with that as long as it's well explained and clear to everyone.
As long as what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part of what you said, Brian.
As long as it's well explained and clear to everyone that the application maybe is not an accurate representation of what that parcel of land is.
Okay. Well, I think it was clarified in the testimony today, but if there's something more we need to do, we're certainly willing to do it. But I think the questioning should, you know, reflect the testimony.
You can continue, Mr. Schmidt.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. I guess I want to circle back to one thing that was discussed. It had to do with the native prairie land where the proposed project may be located eventually. Do you know, was there any study done for Dakota Skipper habitat with respect to this project?
I would need to look back at the reports that Grouse Mountain submitted to answer that question.
Moving to some agency correspondence, and I know you discussed this issue with Mr. Bender, and I also see from exhibit number one that there have been letters sent to a variety of different agencies, and I know we have a response from the State Historical Society in the exhibits, and you also alluded to some correspondence with the NDDEQ. Do you know if that correspondence is in the record anywhere?
The SHPO correspondence is yes. The correspondence received from the agency letters, I'm scrolling through right now. I believe that any correspondence that's been received needs to be filed.
Okay. I know you indicated that the company was committed to following the recommendations of DEQ, correct?
Yes.
So I guess we'd have to see what those recommendations are, right?
Correct.
Okay. And that's something that we'll see, I guess, after the hearing probably?
That is correct.
Is there any other agency correspondence that you or any representatives of OE2 North have received through this reach out that you've done to the variety of government agencies that's not in the exhibits today that you're aware of?
Not to date, no.
Have you been in contact with any of these state or federal agencies personally?
No.
Okay, I think that's all the questions I have for now. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk, do you have any questions for this witness?
I do. I guess I'll have some additional questions on following any redirect that Mr. Bender does. Hopefully some of the missing information will be clarified at that point, but I think Mr. Schmidt identified a few gaps that we need to just tie up here. So however you guys want to do that, I won't follow up with additional questions that you might not have the answers to right now. But do you, just on the sound specifically, you mentioned that the company has some, you know, a lot of the most sound generating equipment within buildings that have the sound protective materials inside. So where do you, and then you assured that the sound levels would meet the requirements. Where do you test the sound levels and what are the requirements? Is there a local sound requirement or what requirements do you have to meet?
So that would be a question for Mr. Perdue. As far as any testing and the...
He told me that you were the sound person, or somebody was. He deferred that to you.
As far
I did ask him about
commission.
That. Sure. The engineering design would be a question for Mr. Perdue.
Mr. Lawrence.
How the engineering design will meet that.
Mr. Bender?
Yeah, I apologize, Your Honor, but Commissioner Fedorchuk, that's something we can cover either on redirect or some. I guess now we're probably talking about calling another witness to address those questions.
Okay. All right, that sounds fine. I'll wait with that then. And then my only other question for you, Ms. Eldinga, is, where are the agency responses to all the letters? I see all the letters included in that were sent out, but I don't really see any letters back.
To date, we've only received one response.
And that's from the health department?
That's from NDEQ.
Oh, DEQ, okay. All right. I guess says something in and of itself. So thank you very much. Appreciate it. I don't have any more questions for you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Crosses.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of questions. Can you, when you had talked earlier, I believe you stated a half mile buffer zone. Can you define what that buffer zone? Well, not to surprise you, I'm just looking at proximity of the plant to the Montana border and the fact that 142 acres, I believe, are owned, which would be approximately just under a quarter of land, a half mile by a half mile. How do you extend beyond that half mile with a buffer zone when it's not land you own? Can you describe that for me or explain that?
Sure. Looking at page OE2046 is the map, and the red circled area defines the study area for the project. That's the half mile.
Okay. So when you're describing it as a buffer zone, it's more, would it be better defined as the study area versus a buffer zone?
That's correct.
Okay, and then I think in reading the testimony, no concerns with the two identified drainages, one to the northeast and then one to the northwest of the plant location, and then they would both, looking at the map, I'm assuming slope to the north or downward as they head north into the main drainage that runs roughly east and west?
Correct.
Are there any buffers that have to be put into those drainages to operate the plant safely, or is that because of evaporation really a moot point if a leak occurred?
So operation, you're asking operationally what would be put in place?
No, environmental impact if a leak should occur. It's just the nature of the product. It would most of it evaporate before it ever made its way to the main drainage?
That's correct.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Christman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Nanette, did you say when the weed survey was done?
I can tell you that. I'm scrolling, if you can tell by my eyes.
That's all right, because you said you're a fast scroller. So.
I'm pretty darn fast. Let's see. Okay, here we go. March 5th and 6th, the survey was conducted of 2020.
So would you say that that's not really very relevant, that most weeds wouldn't be growing then, and unless it was really a heavy infestation where there was residue from last year's growth, that it's going to need to be resurveyed before you begin construction, potentially moving things around anyway?
So it was part of OE2's weed management plan. They would take that into consideration, yes.
Very good. And for people that have interests up there but don't necessarily have access very easily to your drainage plans, would you just describe for me, is it you're going to have a pond on site to hold stormwater and discharge it when it's clean, or let it evaporate, or how's that all going to work?
I don't have the stormwater management plan in front of me. I apologize.
Can we assume that water is going to be held, though, and not just discharged from the plant site as it comes down out to the north?
Sorry, I'm looking for anything. I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay, that's something I think we need to know. And then in relation to that, I think it's pretty clear from just looking at maps and such, and I think Commissioner Crash has touched on this too, the water apparently flows generally north into that stream. Do you know if that stream generally flows easterly or westerly?
I believe easterly.
And is that a regular flowing kind of a creek, or is that an intermittent stream, just a kind of a lowland?
I believe intermittent.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
I have no questions. So, Mr. Bender, did you want to?
I believe Mr. Renfant has a couple of questions.
What? Oh, yes. Mr. Renfant.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Nan, you mentioned that if sampling units 9 or 13 turn out to be a wetland, that you will either use or avoid them or use a mitigation plan for that. What specifically is your mitigation plan for those two?
So that would be, that would be through consultation with the Corps of Engineers. So OE2 and Grouse Mountain would consult directly with the Corps and follow their recommendations.
Okay. Can you file copies of any final wetland reports or delineations with the commission once completed?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. No other questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Bender.
Your Honor, I'm going to have some redirect, and I'm likely to call a, not necessarily, I guess, a rebuttal witness, but a witness to address some of the questions that Commissioner Fedorchuk had, and possibly some of the questions that Mr. Schmidt raised that weren't able to be answered. So I'd request a recess at this point in time. I don't know how much time, you know, you or the commissioners would want to take. I know we're getting close to the lunch hour, and if you'd want to take the entire hour, I'm going to need at least a half hour, I think, to 40 minutes so that I can adequately address these issues.
Do the commissioners have any feelings on this? When you say you're going to take a half hour to 40 minutes, 45 minutes, is that the time you'll take to question people, or is that how much of a break you need?
That's how much of a break I need to adequately get the information that that has been requested.
I think that we better go on the safe side then and have a luncheon break at this time. Since we have to take a break for 45 minutes, let's take a break for an hour and come back. Any other thoughts
Ed,
on
how
that?
How about 1 o'clock? I'm going to just round up to 1 o'clock.
Perfect. I like it. So we'll be at recess until 1 o'clock. We'll see you all back then.
What do you suggest, Your Honor? Your Honor, do you suggest that we all sign off and call in again or just stay on the line? What? Any thoughts on that?
Matt?
We can all just stay on. That's what we did previously last week.
Okay. Matt is in the room, and he's the IT expert, and he says that previously everybody just stayed on the line and came back, and that worked out well. So let's do that.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
We're at recess.